Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, last Sunday, Ukrainian President Zelensky appealed to people across the world to join the resistance against Russian invasion and enlist in Ukraine's armed forces. And all week we've all seen the stories and the pictures of brave Ukrainian men from all different nations flying home to defend their home country. Irishman Ivan Farina from County Kildare is flying out tomorrow to travel to the Ukraine to help the Ukrainian people, and he is on the line now. Ivan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
First of all, thanks so much for taking the call. I know you're flying out tomorrow. Ivan, why are you doing this?
Because we are witnessing possibly the greatest injustice in decades, and a conflict, the resolution of which will affect global outcomes for decades more. If we don't get the right resolution to this, if we don't actually win, then by that I mean free democratic countries don't win, we will be leaving it to our children to make these choices. And we have to do this now. We have to put a stop to it now. We have to put a stop to tyranny. We have to put a stop to tyrants. We have to put a stop to all these things. And if we do, it will have consequences which will last generations. And it's worth doing. It's the opportunity is now. We have been forced to make a choice. The dictators have forced us to make a choice, and now we must answer them. And that is why I'm answering the call.
So, Ivan, this isn't your first time going to that part of the world to fight in a war. Can you tell me about Bosnia?
Yes. When I was 21, I was 20 when the war in Croatia started in 1991, and it was, of course, messy. It became very clear very quickly that that Yugoslavia was, it was a confusing picture, because why was Yugoslavia trying to unite itself by cleansing the land of the people it was claiming to liberate? It was ridiculous. And yet, there was this swirling misinformation everywhere that, oh, they were good and this, that, the other, and people were trying to appease Milosevic. And I was a student at the time, and it disturbed me greatly. But then in 92, when the war spread to Bosnia, what happened in Croatia, it just got worse, 10 times worse. The allegations of atrocities were swirling, but there was as many denials. And then in August of 1992, Channel 4, an ITN news crew headed by Penny Marshall, exposed concentration camps in Bosnia. And that was the final proof that we had come to the point where the final rule had been broken, and that rule was never again. So within a week, I sold my collection of art books to finance my trip, and I was packed my bags, and I left the fight to try and defend those people, to try and get them out of those camps, and try and do the right damn thing. So,
Ivan, did you serve in the army here before going to Bosnia?
No, I was a punk in Camden. I've been an Irish immigrant in London and Kilburn. I've been a student, and I would describe myself as a libertine, quite honestly, before I went and fought. But at some point, you have to decide what life is worth, what your life is worth, and what life in general is worth, and make a stand. Life has to be about something. It can't just be about day-to-day existence. So when you're young, you're idealistic. You can afford to be, I suppose. So that was my stance at the time, and still is now today. I suppose when something is carved into stone, it doesn't alter again.
It says here in my notes that you were, before going to Bosnia, you say you were anti-war. So do you remember that light bulb moment, or that moment you thought, I physically have to go and do something here?
Yeah, that light bulb moment was the concentration camps, when that came on the screen. Because I had argued, I had tried to reason with people, and that we had to do something more. Some people, I get it, we live a comfortable world, we live in a comfortable lives, and it's far away, but it wasn't that far away. And these countries were the same size as Ireland, so it was easier to understand what was going on. I don't know, maybe that connection, you know, whether they were Catholic or Muslim, it didn't matter to me. But just the size of the country, maybe that sort of resonated, and the fact that no one was stepping in. But I was anti-war. I marched behind the CND banner against the first Gulf War to Bald Bridge, the American embassy. But this point, what was happening in Yugoslavia was just, it was about outcomes, that if we tolerated genocide, actual putting people into camps and slaughtering them, well, and the victors would have a place at the table of Europe and help decide and write the rules of our communal future, and that was unacceptable. That was how I felt. This was unacceptable. And it was my intention to go out there and hold the line until the international community intervened. And sadly, that took a few years. Mm-hmm. I honestly would have expected a lot sooner, but it took a few years. So it took a few years of fighting.
Ivan, am I right in saying you got injured when you were in Bosnia?
Yes. I was struck by a piece of shrapnel in the face, wiped out about 10% of my skull and shot my brain full of shrapnel. So that was late 92. So I was in hospital for 3 months, but there's no support network at that point because people were literally on bread rations. If you were injured, you got treated and then you were sent back to your family. But my family was in Ireland, so I arrived back in Ireland on Christmas Eve, 1992, to recover. I was 3 months in hospital and out, and just that was it. I had to basically find my own way back to rehabilitate, to come to terms with things, and then get myself back over to Bosnia to finish the job.
Wow.
And that's what I did.
Is that where you met your wife, Maria?
Yes. In my original, when I was originally injured, Maria was one of the ward nurses on the ward I was in. And I was one of the, I was sent to a ward for neurological damage. And I wasn't expected to wake. And if I did, I was supposed to be severely mentally damaged or physically brain damaged. But I recovered. I woke up and she was there. And when I went back to the war, I had to, things are more organized, so I had to get my military records in order. I had to go to the hospital. So, and we met again. I asked her out to dinner, and, well, 25 years later, there you go. I'm still paying the bill.
Yeah, you're married. You have two daughters now. What does she think of you flying out to the Ukraine?
My wife is now sitting in the sitting room stitching me up eye patches to take with me and helping me get my battle gear ready.
Wow.
She is 100% behind me. She says she's emotional, but she's 100%. She has seen what has happened. She has lived through a war. And she feels very strongly in support of the Ukrainian people and President Zelensky, and so do I. So we
this is support on a different level. I mean, most people are donating and dropping off nappies
everybody,
to drop off points.
That is completely commendable. I have friends over there who are working for the OSCE, et cetera, because I know a lot of people in sort of security work. And they're doing an equal job.
You're risking your life.
We must all do what we can do.
I have to ask you, because obviously you go to Bosnia, you're a student, you go over there, you've never picked up a gun in your life. What happens when you arrive? Do you go to the front line? Do you go find? Like, what do you do?
I was directed by Croatian authorities into Bosnia, a place called Bosanski Brod in northern Bosnia, in the Posavina region of northern Bosnia. It was an enclave under siege we were outnumbered 20, 30 to 1. And it was difficult, but I mean, the young boy, I can't give his name, he was a young gypsy boy whose family had been wiped out. He showed me how to shoot a Kalashnikov, and that was the only training I got. Thereafter, I was in battle. In my first battle, my unit was decimated. I was missing in action and had to get my own way out. That was my first experience of combat.
Wow.
Thereafter, my own commander was badly wounded in that fight. I was promoted to corporal and started leading patrols and reconnaissance. And I graduated further up the chain a bit and eventually got involved in guerrilla fighting and commando work. So,
do you think this will be different in the Ukraine? Do you think you kind of know what to expect? Or what do you see is going to happen?
Absolute devastation they are unleashing. I mean, when people look at the apartment blocks being bombed in the news, they should look at the gigantic holes. I mean, they've literally pulverized entire buildings to dust. And these are civilian buildings. So there is an immense amount of firepower being unleashed, concentrated on areas. But this is a very, very big country, so there is room for us to maneuver and to strike the enemy where they're weak. And that's what I would hope we would be doing, because either way, the battle is coming to Kiev. The Russians want to... not anti-Russian. I like Russian cinema, Aaron Tarkovsky. I like Dostoevsky. I'm a huge fan of Russian people and culture. This is not about the Russian people. It is, in only in the respect that they also deserve to be free and from Putin.
But, Ivan, do you know many other Irish people that have gone over already or are planning on going?
I'm glad you mentioned that. I am not the first to go. I don't know who's those who have gone before me, But I'm the one talking on the radio, and this is the last radio interview I'm doing. I'm not going to be the guy standing in a soapbox. They went silently. Mm. Now, if I'm walking literally and figuratively into the darkness, these Irish guys are ahead of me, and they are holding the torch. There are Irish guys already on the ground. And my estimation is that these guys are trained, they are disciplined, and they're probably getting ready to get onto the front line now. So I'm not the first. I don't know of this, but I know there are Irish men out there.
There are others.
Yeah.
How do you prepare for tomorrow? You're heading off tomorrow. How are you spending today in Ireland before you head out?
Well, today is the Garden of Gethsemane. It's where you basically spend the best time you can with your family. You prepare your battle equipment. You prepare your pills and your rations, whatever else you can bring. If you've got room, we're trying to figure that out, what stuff we can bring that I might just be able to give away to people who need it. I mean, I've got to bring wheelie luggage. I mean, I've got, at the moment now, in my hall is stacked full of combat equipment. I've got an Osprey body armor kit, but I have no Kevlar plates for it. I'm still waiting on an armor to deliver those, please God, today. So if I get the Kevlar plates, I'll be happy. But if I don't get the Kevlar plates, I'll bring it anyway, because I can probably get a piece of steel cut to put in the inserts. And if I do get body armor myself, I can pass this suit on to someone else who can do the same thing then. This is how you prepare. You get ready to fight. So, and you bring everything you need, from a spoon to toothbrush. I have a portable solar panel. I have made sure my equipment is all interchangeable and can be charged using that. I have funds set up. I have outreach, so I can, there are places I can go to basically get funds. I have connections over there and over here, a bit of a support network. And I will be sharing that with other Irishmen I meet. And okay. If I do meet any other Irishmen, particularly ones who are inexperienced, I hope to be able to give them the benefit of my own experience.
And trying your best to keep in contact with your wife and two daughters in Kildare.
Yes, there is a point where I'm going to try and set up some sort of update system, where, because it's not going to be constant. I mean, we live in an age where, okay, everything's connected, but if you have a mobile phone turned on, the signal can be triangulated. So you don't want to have your phone active in any way until you're in a very, very safe place. So it is, as I said, yeah, it's literal and figurative darkness in a way, you know.
Ivan, a lot of texts are coming in, 51552. I'll just give you an example of one. This man is the best of us. Please thank him for all of us that do not have this bravery. I think you're doing something pretty amazing, Ivan. So brave. Please make sure you stay safe over there and come home.
Well, thank you for letting me speak. And I hope you let Ukrainians have their say as well. Could you do me a favour?
Yeah.
You play music, don't you?
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. There's one song. It's by the Mike Curb Congregation. It's called Burning Bridges. If you could play that, that'd be nice.
Do you know what? I don't normally take requests, but that's a request I cannot say no to. So I'm going to find that for you, and I'm going to play that in the next few minutes for you, okay?
Thank you very much.
Ivan, thank you so much for joining us today. That was Ivan, a photographer from County Kildare, who is flying out tomorrow to go and fight against Russia in Ukraine. Just incredible. We're going to find that song, because I've never heard of it. I have Graham on the case. And to Ivan and your family, we wish you the very best of luck. And we hope to speak to you soon.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.